Blog Talk Radio.
In the dead of night, when thy winter wounds shall not be healed from the wind which howls about your being. In the dead of night, when your friends have gone and you sit huddled by the castle's fire. In the dead of night, when all is dark, who will you be tonight? Welcome to the Shadows of the Night Zone.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, madam and messieurs. Welcome to the Night Zone. My name is Colin Knight. Boy, have we got a good show for you tonight.
In the Night Zone with Colin Knight. In September 1977, as a serving soldier at Fort Benning, Georgia, our next guest experienced a series of unexplained events which were controlled by the U.S. military. In the evening of September 1977, while in mandatory formation of over 1,000 men at Fort Benning, John T. Vasquez experienced what can only be concluded as a military experiment involving off-world beings. During these encounters, Fort Benning was on a mandatory lockdown for a month, and a cover story was leaked to the local newspaper, the Converse Ledger, who reported a mass outbreak of measles, which allowed the base to be quarantined for the month of September 1977. During these classified events in September, in the last week of September, a petite female lieutenant and six drill instructors were assigned to the base. They came as drill instructors, yet the talk was that the lieutenant was actually a psychiatrist and had free rein to talk with any subject involved in what can only be described as a covert. She was going to hate herself for doing this. John felt a needle prick in his hand and fell into what can only be described as a hypnotic state, and remembers answering a number of questions put to him. Afterwards, she said, "You will forget everything," pressing hard on his temples until he felt tremendous pain. John did forget about the incident until April the 13th, 1989, when he awoke from a horrific nightmare. After focusing on the image residue in his mind, he realized one of the figures in his nightmare was a friend who was in formation in September 77, screaming for him and shouting in panic, "John! John!" It took a long time to remember these issues. After the initial breakthrough, John continued to remember bits and pieces of September 1977 until he had what was believed to be the whole picture. Famed abductee investigator Bud Hopkins assisted in John's memory recall by hypnotizing John T. Vasquez, and John finally recalled the Fort Benning incident. John T. Vasquez and the Fort Benning incident, next in the Night Zone. Intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although the Night Zone takes all precautions to bring you quality information, the Night Zone and its subsidiaries or affiliates do not accept responsibility for information provided by our guests or hosts. The Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, KP at MTOR. Host Colin Knight.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome to the Night Zone. We have a very strange occurrence happening tonight. I was cautioned by Chris Holly that after she wrote the John Vasquez story that strange things would happen. Well, tonight, 45 minutes before showtime, I go to set up the system and dial in onto my Skype system, and lo and behold, no access. No access to my internet browser, no access. My service company, my provider, says that there was no problem with the line. They couldn't understand why I couldn't actually get online. So we ripped out two computers from upstairs apartment, brought them down here, unloaded the necessary software, and I'm praying to God that John Vasquez is with me tonight. Are you there, John?
Yes, sir, I am.
Oh, my good Lord, that works. Hang in there, John. This is a strange anomaly for the Night Zone. Now, we're going to kind of do this what we call dry rip and read. But tonight, in the shadows of the Night Zone, we shall examine the strange occurrences at Fort Benning, Georgia, with John T. Vasquez. This show is not for the faint of heart. So if you have small children, please remove them or switch to a headset mode before listening to the show. Before we get to John, an interesting occurrence also took place at 6:30 a.m. in southern Alberta, Canada this morning. Some early risers in Alberta got a glimpse of a fireball streaking across the sky Tuesday morning. University of Calgary geologist Alan Hildebrand said about a dozen witnesses reported to the sightings and reported them to the Canadian Fireball Reporting Center. A meteor weighing about 10 to 100 kilograms broke into pieces southwest of Calgary at about 6:30 a.m. local time. Likely, it burned up before hitting the ground, said Professor Hildebrand. Now, it was sort of a blue haze when breaking into pieces, apparently. It was like you could almost go into the field and find it. It was so close. It was like something people have seen around here last November. So, here we go. We've got all of these freaky things happening, and I have with me John T. Vasquez live. John, thank you for being so patient, sir.
Well, that's fine. I just want to let you know right now, I'm just getting over with a flu,
right.
And once in a while I'll choke up and cough a little bit. So bear with me, please. Everybody seems to be getting some kind of flu here in San Diego. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's that time of year, I think, John. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, John, after reading your account of the Fort Benning incident, compliments of Chris Holly at the FTTO UFO website, I must admit I was enthralled with your story. From my calculations now, granted they're fairly rough, it took you about 12 years for this information to bubble through and surface in your mind.
Yes, that's correct.
That's
absolutely correct. Yes.
During that 12 years, did you get any flashes or any indication that there was something in your mind that had been blocked?
No flashes or any kind of unusual living at all. I went to work, come home, raised my son, and my wife helped. I mean, it's everyday normal routine procedures.
Right.
And it's just that one night, that surprising day, maybe something, I watched TV or maybe I ate something I don't know. You know, I hear a lot of psychologists or psychiatrists say it could have been anything. It could have been just, you know, the way you were sleeping that day or woke up early morning. Something could have triggered
memories. I had a friend that had a traumatic incident when he was a child and didn't remember much of it. But the smell of burning toast would always really upset him. He would get very, very upset and couldn't understand why. And it turns out that the traumatic incident was a fire in the house when he was a child, and it was caused from him and his brother trying to make toast. And they burnt the toast, and the toaster caught fire, and they panicked, and it transcended from there. And he blocked all of that out, completely blocked it out. until he smelt this particular whatever level of burnt toast it was. And
I don't know how to explain my ordeal, but waking up to or remembering this incident at Fort Benning, that same day and that night, it was a normal day. I mean, it's a normal routine day, and I went to work, came back home, had dinner, and that night I just had a terrible, terrible nightmare. It could have been anything. I can only assume that maybe because of we had a squirrel that lived on a tree. I mean, I don't know, that could have caused anything. I don't know what that caused anything.
Who knows what the trip was? But thank God that. Right. Thank God that the trigger happened, because Incident at Fort Benning is a pretty decent book. Some friends of mine have read it, and they have told me, I haven't been able to get a hold of a copy yet, just because I'm busy, but I'm working on it. I have found it. It is available. In fact, on the Blog Talk Radio Network website for the Night Zone, on this particular show, whoever's tuned into this show, and believe me, ladies and gentlemen, I'm blind. I do not see the studio. So I'm hoping that one of our compadres is somewhere in the studio, at least wrangling the people and making sure that they're okay, because I do not see the studio tonight, just so everybody that's in the studio doesn't get all twitched because I don't look at them. But on the website, there is a link to Incident at Fort Benning. You can purchase it new and used. But you outlined what happened in the month of September 1977. So for our listeners, can you briefly kind of just set the scene of this incident? It was a September evening. It was sticky.
Yes.
It was hot.
Muggy.
Yeah. How long had you been at Fort Benning?
I've been there since June of 77.
Right.
I came from home. Actually, I started off with an National Guard unit back in February of 77. I went to training at Fort Leavenworth, Missouri.
Right.
Basic training, went back home, and then I had to go to this another National Guard training at Fort Irwin,
right,
California, and that was a desert training, which was, they call it Red Flag.
Right.
And came back home, and that's when I requested to be in a regular army, and I had to get a approval from the major,
right,
which I did. And within a week, I was already on my way to Fort Benning.
Excellent. So this was your first posting in the regular forces.
Yes.
Okay.
Regular forces. Yes.
When
regular army.
Okay, now obviously the life was much different than what you had you'd had in the past. So you were pretty well regimented. Would that be fair to say? They were throwing it at you pretty good.
Oh yeah. You were already seasoned, so a seasoned a troop soldier,
right,
in basic training. And when I started at Fort Benning, it became more advanced. It's called AIT, Advanced Infantry Training.
Right.
Combat training.
Okay. So it's early evening. It's sticky, muggy. Was it overcast?
No, it's not overcast. It's just September is a normal, I guess you call that normal, being humid, sticky, and you're perspiring all day.
Okay, so I guess those people in Georgia would be able to relate to what you're speaking of. So your company, your troop was ordered, 1,000 men or so, were ordered to a specific field on the base on this evening in September.
Yes, we were. This was evening about 7, before 7:30 came around. One of the sergeants came into our barracks and told us get ready for a mandatory formation.
Okay.
Which you had to be out there or you're considered AWOL.
Right. Parade inspection.
And, it's parade inspection. Well, 7:30 came around, all of us started walking out the barracks because same sergeant came back and told us go, let everybody move out to this field where there's Alpha, Bravo, Charlie Company, and Delta Company, which I was in.
Right.
And each company consists of 300 people. But you have, that's roughly, because you got to consider the officers, the sergeants, the supply crew, and the kitchen crew out there. So, you know, I give it a rough estimate of 1,300.
Right.
And
So you're out there, you're in formation, and you're expecting your CO or somebody to come and crack the whip and say something.
Oh, yeah. We were standing out there for about, 45 minutes?
Right.
And I know we all knew that his standard speech was the was going to be announced by the captain, and he was going to talk to us about this training course.
Right.
And
while you're standing there waiting that 45 minutes or so, was there any upper brass there other than the CO? Was there any of the upper echelon there?
Oh no. This
just,
is just captains, lieutenants, and
sergeants.
Sergeants, yeah.
Right.
All the sergeants.
Right.
We're all out there, and we're waiting for each captain and each company to step away from captain's building and onto the podium and make these speeches.
Right. So while you were standing there, the guys in formation were starting to do the whisper and the chat, and a couple of guys were pointing, and you heard them talking about something strange in the sky.
Yeah. I was talking to my buddy who was standing on my right, and all of a sudden somebody said something up front who was standing in front of us, and I don't know what he was talking at first. You know, he said something like, what's that, and I didn't pay no attention because I really didn't know what he was talking about.
Right.
And he said it again, and this time he said, what's that up there? And by then my curiosity got the best of me, so I looked up, and you know, I was looking up in the sky, and I said, well, you know, there's only stars. That's all I see.
Mm-hmm.
Regular, normal night. I mean, you see stars, you see stars.
Right.
And this guy turned around and said, watch the star on the right. I said, okay. So I watched the star on the right, and I watched it for about, 30 seconds, 40, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, the star moved. And I'm thinking, well, a star's not supposed to move.
Okay.
And you're going to have to picture an ice cube in your hand, and you place it on the stainless steel floor, okay?
Right.
And you push that ice cube across you, and you can see how smooth it just travels
right
across the stainless steel floor.
Okay.
No rigid movement. And this bright light looked like a star at that time, moved that way.
Mm-hmm.
Across the sky, and that's when you started hearing the commotion and get louder. The people were pointing, all the guys are pointing in the sky, look at this, you know, and
right.
So the drill sergeant was looking at this, and one of them asked me, what do you think that is, Vasquez? And I said, well, back in 77, I thought it was satellite.
Right, okay, a good,
and,
not a bad analogy, not a bad thought,
yeah.
Possible, you know, like, That's what any sane person, I think, would do. I'll tell you what we did. I took the month of 1977, September, and I had a look around to see what was going on. Now, what day of the month was this, John?
This was September 2nd, 1977.
On September the 3rd, the Commodore PET computer was first sold. September the 5th, the Voyager program, Voyager 1, was launched after a brief delay. That's about as close as I can come to the 1977 date. Now, okay, we'll just leave it at that. We're going to take a quick break, but let's leave it at we're looking in the sky, and you're seeing this anomaly. You thought it was a star, but obviously it's sliding through the air. It's under power. You can see that it's definitely under its own steam, so to speak, correct?
Yes, that's right.
All righty. We'll be right back. Hang in there.
are open 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. Welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone. 2012 is speculated to be the end of the world based on the Mayan calendar and other sources. If you are worried or unsure about it, then some uncommon sense, along with a literal Bible prophecy breakthrough, may help. Find out what kind of a year 2012 will be with Tim McHyde in the Night Zone, your host, Colin Knight.
And indeed, check out the archives of the Night Zone, available through blogtalkradio.com. Go to blogtalkradio.com, type in Night Zone, and you'll see all of the archives. Check out Tim McHyde, John Hogue, Marshall Masters, and a number of other great guests that we've had. Check out the archives, check out the show. Some great stuff up there. We're here tonight with John T. Vasquez and the Fort Benning Incident of 1977.
You are in the Night Zone on blogtalkradio.com. Phone lines are open 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. Welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone. Your host, Colin Knight.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Shadows of the Night Zone. I have with me John T. Vasquez. We're going through the Fort Benning incident, and John has taken us to being in a formation in a field in Fort Benning, waiting for the CO to speak, when the men start to see something in the sky that, first of all, looked like a star, and then it was realized that it was under its own steam. How soon before this 1,000 or 1,500 men, John, how soon before they all started to do the grumble, you know? Anybody yeah. that's been in formation knows what the grumble is.
Yeah. Well, actually, when this star we were looking at, the way it was moving across the sky, and when the sergeant asked me what this was, the star stopped.
Just stopped dead.
It stopped dead, and what it did next was it climbed away from us and then came back, stopped, and it moved across the sky again. By now, everybody's, you know, pointing at the sky, talking out loud. You know, I mean, it was almost like a mass panic. Right. You know, well, not that much, but a lot of them are talking out loud, and nobody was supposed to be moving. But right. they did anyway because everybody was pointing at this object.
Were the sergeants trying to keep everybody calm? Was there anybody?
Well, they were, you know, everybody was, you know, the sergeants were walking around the platoon areas, and then, you know, they were kind of motioning that everybody has to be, you know, calmed down
right.
and, you know, telling everybody it's good. Basically, calm down. You
know? Right.
And then when this star stopped and I mean, started moving across the sky again, it stopped again, went away, it climbed up way away from us, came back, it stopped, and it moved again. And by now, when that happened, again, the same sergeant in our company told us to stand at attention, which meant that we couldn't move. We had to look straight ahead.
Right.
And the company commander was just stepping away from his building and walking up to this podium and starting making a speech.
But you knew something was just not right.
Yeah, I know I wasn't supposed to, you know, move, so I kind of glanced up just a little bit, and this star was gone.
Right.
It was not even in the sky. It was gone. So I told myself, well, I'm sure it was a satellite. That's all I knew at that time.
Right.
And I could hear the company commander making a speech about our training course and telling us what to expect. And by now, I hear this unusual rushing noise.
Right.
And I know I'm not supposed to move, but
like,
I didn't.
Like a swooshing noise? Like a.
No, it sounded like horses running.
Okay.
Like horses running, but right. it's a bit more high pitch to low pitch one.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think I know where, like a very growly timpani, you know, the boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, it's something like that, but it was like a faster pitch almost.
Okay.
Like a rushing.
Right.
And I leaned back a little bit, take a look at this, and I noticed that the people in Charlie Company, the men in Charlie Company,
right.
Some were standing still, another was breaking out, running, out of formation. And I thought, well, something must be going over there, because some of the guys are breaking out for some reason.
Right.
And suddenly I see this bright, intense light. This really white, bright, intense light.
Right.
And it had a sort of a bluish outline on it, circular. And it was traveling, descending from this dirt road. And I thought, well, this must be a helicopter that's coming down.
Right.
Something's wrong with it. That's why the guys are running.
Right.
Maybe it's going to crash.
Now, Charlie Company is how far away from you at this point?
Not far. Just right, like, how can I put this? If the 7-Eleven was just, oh, wait a minute. It's not far. It's
1,000 feet.
Half the size of the building.
About 1,000 feet.
Yeah, less than that.
Okay.
And you can see the guys running out. You know.
Alrighty.
The figures, you could figure who they are and who's running, who's not.
And some of them are still standing to attention.
Some of them are still standing. Yeah.
And others are breaking out and
breaking out,
they're
right?
Screaming, shouting.
Shouting. Yeah, there was shouting going on. There, I don't know what they were shouting about, but someone was. Saying something like take cover or something
right.
like this.
Okay.
And I wanted to take a better look at this light that was coming, well, descending through down to the dirt road.
Right.
And when I leaned forward, I know I'm not supposed to move, but I wanted to lean forward, and I did. And when I did that, I saw this bright, intense light, but the height of a truck by now.
Right.
One light still, intense white light. And I was telling him, he said, it must be a truck. It's only one light on, unless he's following the truck. And I was supposed to, I wanted to say something to this guy who was talking to earlier about this light, the star in the sky.
Right.
He's a tall guy, about 6'1", 2". And I looked up and I wanted to say, hey, what is this? And, you know, what's going on here? Where is this light coming down a dirt road here?
Right.
And when I looked up at his face, he was asleep.
Just right out of it.
He's standing there with his eyes closed.
Wow.
He's looking like looks like he was looking down the ground. I was looking at his face and asleep.
And this was like many of the ones that were still standing in formation.
When I saw him sleeping, I said, I don't know what happened to me, but then I leaned back and I became unconscious for about a few seconds.
Right.
And when I awoke or was aware of what was happening to me in my surroundings, I couldn't move from where I was standing. Like I was frozen there.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't move my foot.
Right.
And I looked up. I turned to my right, and my friend, buddy, who was standing on my right, was already running.
Right.
And I noticed that when he was running away from me, I noticed there were a lot of other people standing around in my company.
Mm-hmm.
Others were running to the tree lines, and the other half was like sort of diving underneath this cross space. It was about 2 feet high cross space, and these barracks, this army barracks,
right.
which was built in 1940 or 50s.
So they're built off the ground.
It's one of those kind of buildings. I'm sure they're still. Some of them are still here in San Diego, Mega
right.
Base. And I noticed the guys diving underneath there, taking cover, and I yelled at my friend to come back and help me because I couldn't move.
Right.
So he came back running, and he's screaming at me, you know, John, give me your arm. And he pulled me from where I was standing.
Right.
We started to run, and I'm screaming, "Where's the captain? Where's the captain?" Right. So is he. And we knew where he was, yeah. So he ran over there where the captain was.
Right.
And I noticed a lot of other people were standing around, others were still running all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Pure pandemonium. Pandemonium.
Yeah. Pandemonium.
Yeah.
Pandemonium. John, I tell you what, I'm going to let you catch your breath here.
Yeah.
And we're going to take a quick break. Hans, do you want to pick up the phone and let him go? Let him know that we're going to go 30 minutes over. So I have you for another 60 minutes, if that's okay, John.
Yes, that's fine.
Okay, we'll be right back.
John T. Vasquez and the Forbidden Incidents from the Night Zone. Lines are open, 347-324-3287, 347-324-3287.
If you are a registered listener for the Night Zone webpage, click the blue chat button and join us in the virtual studio. From there, it is merely a click away.
The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although the Night Zone takes all precautions to bring you quality information, the Night Zone and its subsidiaries or affiliates do not accept responsibility for information provided by our guests or hosts. The Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, KVMTOR.
Welcome to the shadows
of the Night Zone.
We all have busy lives, and sometimes we just can't get to the computer when we want to. Sometimes programs schedule at a time and a place an event when we just can't be there. But never fear, Blog Talk Radio have figured an answer. Yep, you can go to any of your favorite radio shows on blogtalkradio.com and download their archives or their player, and voila, you have access to your favorite shows. It's as easy as that.
You're in the Night Zone with Colin Knight. Phone lines are open, 347-324-3287, 347-324-3287. You are in the Night Zone on blogtalkradio.com. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Colin Knight.
And good evening and welcome back to the Night Zone. I am Colin Knight, and I have with me John Vasquez tonight as we discuss the Fort Benning incidents. Let me remind the people that may be in the virtual studio, I have no access to the studio at this point in time, so I hope you're all having a great time down there, and I hope you're being taken care of by one of our friends or associates that will be in the studio. John, so you took off running back towards the barracks diving into the crawl space under the barracks. What was happening next?
Well, what happened next is that we found ourselves with, of course, we stepped over or moved away from the captain.
Right.
But we knew what happened to him. We encountered him.
He was unconscious.
Well, actually, he was behind the podium, and you might say he was asleep.
Okay.
We tried to wake him up, but he didn't wake up.
Not going to happen. Yeah. Okay. So you had it. Headed for the barracks.
We headed to the barracks, and we came to the second building, and we heard our names called, so we ran over there, my buddy and I, and we saw five other people underneath the barracks, and we called underneath there, and we started arguing about what was going on, and things are happening so fast, you know.
Right.
And while we're arguing, all of a sudden, we could hear somebody screaming and yelling. And the same place that my buddy and I just ran across, the first building, we saw Sergeant Santini.
Right.
And he's flapping his arm up and down and screaming and yelling about us for us to, you know, take cover. And that was odd, the way he was acting. But he started to run, and we lost him behind the second building.
Okay.
And something bizarre happened next.
Okay.
At the second level of the first building, which is two-story high,
right.
We saw this bright, intense ball light. It's about the size of a a melon.
Okay.
Yeah, small melon, honeydew melon size.
Mm-hmm.
It just showed up on a second level, and it stopped. It swooped down to Sergeant Santini height, which is about 5'11", 6 foot, chased after him, and all we heard was somebody hitting the pavement, and I heard a slap, so we figured it was Sergeant Santini.
Right.
And we got one of the guys to crawl over there, and when he came back, he said, yeah, Sergeant Santini's on the pavement. He's not moving. So we started arguing about, where is the M16? We're going to arm ourselves.
Right.
And we started hearing screaming going on where the formation was.
Mm-hmm.
The guys we left behind the formation started screaming. We hear a lot of high-pitched screaming, like, you know, something was happening to them.
And no gunfire, no gunfire or
no gunfire at all.
No grenades, no nothing.
Nothing. It's just the way they were screaming. It's like something horrible was happening to them.
Right.
And I told one of my buddies, we need to go out there and help these guys. And he turned around and says, forget about it. They're already dead.
Right.
So, you know, we geared ourselves up. We're engaged now.
Mm-hmm.
And
the adrenaline's high.
We're in a mold. We're in the mold.
You're in war mode. Yeah, okay.
So, next thing happening is that while we're arguing about this, and we come to the conclusion that it's the Russians, the Russian invasion, Russian invasion.
Right. Which was the big thing in the 70s. I mean, it truly was. Carter was not handling things very well.
Oh, yeah, it was really big. We have posters in our barracks, Russian flags, you know, and all these good things. And, by then, we had this huge, intense light, a lot more bigger than the one we just saw.
Right.
And it's like looking into one of those searchlights that you see once in a while at yard sale or car sale, you know, here.
Right.
Spotlights.
Yeah.
And this thing was that large, and it was cruising, second level building on top.
So it was searching with this light?
Well, this thing was cruising around the building, and it looked like it was looking for something.
Okay.
And I'm going faster, and it's coming around the building, and my friend was asking me, what do you think it is? And I said, I don't know, whatever it is, it's coming our way. And he asked, what do you want to do, John? And I said, well, let's crawl back into the center of the building. It's much more darker.
Right.
So we all of us started crawling to the center, and by now, this intense, bright, bright, huge, intense light plucked itself right in front of us.
Hmm. No sound of a chopper, no sound of motors, okay?
No, just this light, intense light. Excuse me, 1 second.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But,
do you need a break, John?
No, I'm fine. Okay. I just a little choking once in a while. I've got water here.
Right.
I see the building underneath the building. It was illuminating.
Right.
And I see the guys, and I don't know, some other bizarre things started happening. I hear this female voice from my upper left forehead.
Okay.
It's like a slight pressure there. I hear this female voice, and it sounded like metallic.
Right.
It's like she was far away, echo,
mm-hmm.
And she was telling me, it's okay. Don't be afraid. Come out. And I turned around and I asked the guys, you guys hear this? And they all kind of looked at me like, I don't know, John.
Yeah.
Something's happening to you. And I hear it again, the same thing. She said the same thing. And I told the guys that. And of course, the guys kind of became more suspicious of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, listen, I'm going to go out there and find out what this thing is.
Mm-hmm.
So I started crawling out the building, and one of the guys followed me. I said, no, stay back, just don't follow. And I started crawling out of the building, and this light was so intense, my hands disappeared.
Wow.
It became invisible. But I could see that the ground, and I could feel the ground, but I don't see my hands.
Wow. It was, had your hands disappeared in this reality, or was it just the light was so intense?
It could have been both. It could have been the light that's so intense that it covered my whole hands and made it disappear.
Was it
all light?
Was the light hot? Did you feel any heat?
No hotness, just intense white light.
Wow.
And then.
Okay, you've got you got the hairs on my arms all freaked out now. So I tell you what, you may not need a break, John, but I do. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Welcome to the Shadows
of the Night Zone.
I could feel them actually coming before they would take me, and my ears would feel like they were in a wind tunnel. If that makes
On the 7th of April, we have Amy, the pagan witch, returning with us, her special sense of spring. And on the 14th, Petra glitz in the sky. Jeff is back with us to tell us more of the Phoenix Lights.
Let me take you on a journey to Phoenix, Arizona.
Come on.
UFOs are among us. South Mountain, where the petroglyphs show evidence that the Indians knew all about this. March 13, 1997, the UFOs showed their presence, the Phoenix Lights. And it was seen by masses. Still people hating, still people doubting. Roosevelt came through and destroyed all the petroglyphs on the mountain, cause they knew they amounted to something, but they didn't want to admit. Now we got rumors of a UFO base under the cliffs. Vortex is letting out lights day and night. I wonder what's happening on the walls, what they write. When the light shines just at the right time, you can see snakes devour the heads of mankind. Petroglyphs in the sky, watch some UFOs fly by. We in the southwest Arizona, Sonoran Desert, UFOs are among us.
You are in the Night Zone on BlogTalkRadio.com. The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although the Night Zone takes all precautions to bring you quality information, the Night Zone and its subsidiaries or affiliates do not accept responsibility for information provided by our guests or hosts. The Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, KVADMTOR, welcome to the Shadows of the Night Zone.
And welcome to the Shadows of the Night Zone. So we're looking into this light, John. As you reach your hand out, you can't see your hand.
Yes, that's correct. It's invisible. But I could feel the ground. That's one thing. I'm feeling the ground. I can see the ground. It's just my hands just become invisible. And I was crawling into this grassy mall.
Right.
And I passed a sidewalk. And when I got up to this grassy mall, I stood up, turned to my left, and this intense white light was sitting there.
Right.
About the size of, a Volkswagen, or maybe bigger than a Volkswagen.
Okay.
Something huge was sitting there. And I look down to my left, and I see something small, scurry right back into the light real quick.
Right.
I couldn't figure out what that was, but it moved so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I shield my hands over my eyes because the light was so intense.
Right.
And that's when I saw my hands, I figured that my hands were still there.
Right.
Something hit my left hand, left shoulders, and it sounded like a fuse being blown.
Right.
And I fall down, and my other friend who was there underneath the building was screaming my last name out, reaching for me, and I saw my hands this time, and I was reaching for him, and I felt another fuse or something hit my back,
mm-hmm.
because it blown out again.
Right.
I don't know what that was, and I become unconscious.
Right.
What happened next is I started remembering that there was a person on my left, mm-hmm. another person on my right. They were both telling me to keep my eyes closed.
Right.
And I followed that direction because they sounded like male, you know.
Right.
And they had a blanket or something, a cover over my body, and then I started being lifted up.
Right.
Felt like being on the elevator.
Okay. So you were on a gurney probably, right? On a stretcher.
I don't think it was a stretcher. I think it was just some kind of cover.
Okay.
It was just a cover or something. I know it was around my body. It was, you know, covering
right.
my whole body.
Okay.
And I was being lifted up, and they would keep telling me to keep my eyes closed. But I sort of looked to my right, looked downwards, and I know I was being lifted up because the ground was about like 15 feet. And sure enough, I saw others being carried out that way too, to the sky. And when I looked to the sky, I didn't see no stars. It's like the whole stars had been blanked out.
Right.
Except for this yellowish kind of light. Looks like a door. And I was heading toward it.
Okay.
And from there, I remember hearing this voice, female voice again. And she was asking me, how do I feel? And I said, how do I feel? What? You know? That was a strange question to ask me.
Right.
And she said, don't worry. Everything's going to be fine. I guess that's when a physical procedure went on.
Right.
And I woke up several times again. I saw this, looked like a plate or something with an insignia on it. On the right side, and I don't know what that was.
Mm-hmm.
They said it was my sign or something like that.
Right.
And this time, I think they all left the room or something, because when I woke up a little bit, I looked to my left, and there's rows of men levitating on this slab, metal slab.
Okay.
And the room.
Like individual slabs.
Yeah, individual slabs and rolls. And
right.
in this room was the size of a mall, shopping mall. You know how
yeah.
large or small it is?
Massive warehouse.
Yeah. And it's, you know, this place is huge. And I see the men like coming sort of a circle around it. And I'm wondering, wow, who are these guys? And I'm telling myself, it's got to be us.
Right.
Got to be us. And, by then, I guess she heard me or something. They came back and they heard me. I'm awake and I'm looking at this. And she pointed her finger at me and told me to go to bed. Go to sleep, not bed. Go to sleep. So I did.
Right.
You know, I followed the orders.
Yeah.
And, I guess they moved me from where I was lying, because when I came to and was aware of where I was, I had this being. I know it was a male, his being looking at me.
Right.
And, that really frightened me.
Was there, when you were there, were you cold? Were you warm?
No, I didn't feel no cold, or I didn't feel anything warm. Just,
did you smell anything? Was there any smells in the air?
It smelled like a laboratory.
Okay.
You know,
so like a sanitized place.
Sanitized laboratory.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this being, and I feel sorry for him, because I don't know why his head was huge and had lumps and bumps and oh my god, it was terrible looking.
Like abscesses or like like massive pimples or just bumps.
Massive lumps.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's all over his head.
Right.
And a huge head and huge eyes, black eyes. And he was telling me to look into his eyes, and I was saying, no, I'm not looking into yours. I don't know who you are. I don't know what's going on. You know. And he says, no, it's okay. It would help you.
Right.
And I'm hearing this, and I say, it'll help me. So I agreed, and I looked into his eyes, and three images came into my mind.
Okay.
One was myself standing in the middle of the ocean. I mean, I looked around and thousands of miles of no land.
Mm-hmm.
So I must have been standing in the ocean somewhere.
Right.
I don't know where. And the next one, next images that came into my mind was that I was in a room. There's a huge TV set of viewpoint.
Right.
And I must have been in a control room or something because there's so much light going off and on. And I'm watching a planet being destroyed.
Hmm.
And I had the impression that this planet I was watching was their planet. And they were showing it to me that this happened to their planet, and they're looking for another one.
Ah.
The same atmosphere.
Okay, and could that be why there was why this person looked like he had some frailties, like he had a injuries with these bumps and what have you?
Maybe that might be part of it because that's the impression I got is that they had to move away from the planet,
right?
And that things were happening to the planet and it destroyed itself Everybody asked, are you sure it wasn't our planet that they were being destroyed? I don't think so, because I had the impression it was theirs.
Right.
And they're looking for one.
Hmm.
They're trying Earth. I don't know. That's my assumption.
Right.
Because they got the same atmosphere that we do, maybe. Yeah. They're here.
This kind of goes on with the petroglyphs in the sky that we're going to do on the 14th of next month with Jeff Woolwine from Phoenix, Arizona. He's got some wild stories about probably a UFO encounter, and it looks very much like there may be a base under this mountain with ancient writing on it. It's a very esoteric kind of a story, but it's fabulous.
What happened next is, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
What happened next is that the third image I saw was a humanoid face. He was wearing a white dressing,
right.
Long face, like pointed face,
okay.
Long nose, a small mouth, and two eyes with looked like silver or mercury.
Okay.
And his face was all pale white, like paste white.
Hmm.
Yeah. And it was a humanoid.
Okay.
And the last thing that happened after that, and I probably went to sleep, or they put me to sleep.
Right.
I woke up, and when I looked up, my buddy was standing next to me, and everybody was back in formation. But the funny thing is that we were in the second line. This time we were in the fourth line.
Hmm. And what kind of a time had lapsed? Did you think from when this thing first started to, do you have any time lapse at all? What did the clock say?
Well, when we told her to go back to our barracks, I said, well, what happened to the captain's speech? Nobody made the speech.
Right.
A lot of us fell down. I fell down, and the ground looked like it came up on us.
Mm-hmm.
And we both got up, walked on, got sick, and I looked at my watch, and it said 7:30. My friend's watch said 3:30, and his friend says 4:45.
Wow.
So it could have been an all-night ordeal. All morning.
Yeah. And no real understanding of the time frame at all?
No, I had a blank thought. I mean, we went back into our barracks, and a lot of the guys were acting real bizarre. A couple of them went to sleep with a flashlight on with a blanket over their faces.
Right.
Other guy popped off their bunk and said, you know, they're pointing at the wall and said, I see something,
right.
Screaming. And my buddy was sitting on his bunk and he's looking at the wall and I said, do you see something? And he goes, no. But he was looking at something. He was just staring at the wall, intense look on his face.
Right. So a lot of these guys obviously were very, very confused. And what they were seeing, they may have been seeing, but were you seeing it?
Right. I think they became tranced at something. You know?
Yeah.
And I don't know how to explain that. I mean, it's almost like in a zombie state.
Right.
You know, their emotions and actions are bizarre, odd. So I couldn't, you know, you have to be there to see this happening to the guy
right.
that you're there and the way they were reacting. Things.
Right. So they were reacting totally out of their normal. Their normal craziness or, you know,
right.
their buddyship, as I call it.
Yeah, that they were acting out of the circle or out of the box.
Wow.
You know.
That would freak a person out when your pals start acting differently. So after this was all over, you mentioned in your story with Chris Holly that there was a young petite lieutenant and a couple of goons that were assigned to your unit. Were they assigned after the incident?
Yes, they were assigned at the end of the month, about the fourth week of September.
Right.
She showed up with five or six drill sergeants, and we never seen them before, and these guys look like ex-football players, you know, tall, big, and we're all telling ourselves, no, we're not going to talk to her, I don't know what she's doing here, because, we don't have female on our post.
Right.
She was the first one to be there, so we're trying to figure out what she's all about. And sure enough, a couple of days later, all of us found out that she was a psychiatrist.
Wow.
And she wanted to talk to all of us. And, well, like everybody else, acting normal, I said, no, I'm not going to talk to her. There's nothing to tell her about, you know. And a couple of days later, maybe 3 days later, I was in the game room watching TV.
Right.
I walked away from the game room and I'm coming down the stairway and there she is with one of my buddies and you know normally you know when you see a buddy you know he tells you hey what's going on John what's
right.
happening right now you know
right.
one of those kind of talk and
mm-hmm.
you tell him yeah what's happening I mean, but this time he just stood there with her and she turned around and looked at him and he just turned around and walked away from me.
Wow.
I told myself, yeah, what's wrong with him, you know? That would have said something to me at least, saying, hey,
right.
you know, hi, John, or something.
So he walked away as if he didn't know you, or he walked away as if he was hiding something?
Well, he walked away sort of in where he acknowledged that she was there.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why he was behaving the way he was, because
yeah.
of her.
Yeah, like full control that she had over him.
Wow.
And she came up the stairway, and I saluted,
mm-hmm.
and she saluted, and next thing happened was that she grabbed my left hand, pulled it to herself, and she said, I'm going to hate myself for doing this, and I felt a sharp pain on my left hand at the end where the small hand, finger is,
right.
the bottom, left side,
right.
and I felt that pain. I said, you didn't have to do this. You didn't have to do this. Next thing I know, I'm under drug-induced hypnosis.
Wow. Hold that thought, John. Hold that thought. We're going 30 minutes over tonight, ladies and gentlemen, so hang in there. We are on very basic systems tonight. I'm running on two laptop computers borrowed from the upstairs apartment because for some reason, an hour before the show, all of my systems would not let me access the internet. Strange behavior tonight. Hang in there, people. We'll be right back.
Lines are open, 347-324-3287, 347-324-3287. Welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone. 2000. 2012 is speculated to be the end of the world based on the Mayan calendar and other sources. If you are worried or unsure about it, then some uncommon sense, along with a literal Bible prophecy breakthrough, may help. Find out what kind of a year 2012 will be with Tim McHyde in the Night Zone, your host, Colin Knight.
And indeed, check out the archives of the Night Zone, available through blogtalkradio.com. Go to blogtalkradio.com, type in Night Zone, and you'll see all of the archives. Check out Tim McHyde, John Hogue, Marshall Masters, and a number of other great guests that we've had. Check out the archives, check out the show. Some great stuff up there. We're here tonight with John T. Vasquez and the Fort Benning Incident of 1977.
You are in the Night Zone on blogtalkradio.com. Phone lines are open 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. Welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone. Your host, Colin Knight.
And as we go 30 minutes over tonight, John, your story has just got me completely captured. This petite lieutenant who had just arrived on the base after the incident, who was turned out to have been a psychiatrist, she hits you with a needle of some kind or something and knocks you out.
Oh, yeah, put me under hypnosis, drug-induced hypnosis.
Right.
And she's asking me all kinds of personal questions, but also what took place at that certain night.
Right.
Friday night, September 2nd, 1977. Right. And what happened to all of us. And I guess I spilled the beans,
right,
told her everything what happened. And, well, when she was finished with me, she said, John, you're going to forget this one part of your life that took place. And how she was going to do it, well, she told me that when I refresh your memory, you're not going to wake up and remember this at all.
Right.
So the only way she did that is she put her left finger on my left temple,
right,
her right finger on my right temple,
right,
and she squeezed inward into the temple, and that was painful. And she was telling me, when you forget this part, and you're going to stand up, and you're going to see me, and I'm going to tell you to go back to training.
Right.
And you're going to forget everything.
Right. And you did for 12 years.
Yeah, that was it. After that, that was it. I didn't remember anything about what happened or who she was. And all she did was started screaming at me, what are you standing here for, soldier? Let's go back to work.
Right.
And I just said, yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am.
Yeah. And with no memory of what had happened in the last little while. And 12 years, and you had a nightmare. And and this nightmare triggered some memories.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't happen. All the memories didn't happen. It didn't flood my mind or anything.
Right.
It gradually started slowly coming back, piece by piece.
Right.
A little bit by little bit, you know. It was like putting a puzzle together.
Right.
1,000 pieces. Put one puzzle, one, you know, this connects, that mm-hmm. connects, and sure enough, within a time frame, I was looking at this unusual event.
Right.
Incident.
And how long did it take you to get the whole story, you know, out of your subconscious or wherever the heck they had it stashed?
Well, actually, I had Dr. Richards. Feltman, he's a clinical psychologist here.
Right.
Also helped after seeing Bud Hopkins, and
right.
Bud introduced me to him, and we both started working on this, and he gradually started seeing himself the incident or the event that was taking place, and we pretty much jumped from one area to another, and gathering information, writing to the Department of Army. Writing under the Freedom of Information Act records, documents, reports, and well, you know, he's looking at this, and I'm looking at this, and by the end of, a year and a half, we come to the point where, yes, something highly unusual was going on. Because there was a test going on at the same time, or exercise, I'm sorry.
Right.
An exercise going on, and it was called JAWS. It's an acronym for Joint Attack Weapon System.
Right.
And they were exercising the A-10 airplane.
Okay.
And that's a funny thing I mentioned that because these A-10 were flown from Nellis Air Force Base to Fort Benning.
Right.
And within a year or two, 1980, the same planes were flown to Bentwater, England. Where the other incident happened, the Air Force guys.
Right.
Same plane. So, I don't know, maybe, you know, I hear that this plane is made out of titanium where they help the pilots from being shot at.
Okay.
And maybe these entities or beings were interested in this titanium metal.
We may have something that they want.
Yeah, I think
so. Wow. Oh, they don't understand our metallurgy, maybe. Maybe what they have is something right out of the norm, because everything that we have is carbon-based.
Carbon-based.
Yeah, maybe they are not a carbon-based species.
Maybe not. I'm assuming that they are part carbon-based, and the other one, I don't know.
Right.
Something different.
Right. So, during this 12 years... How clear did the pieces of information come? Were they like flashes or did they happen?
Yeah, it's like flashes. When you see a flash, you had to make sure this is not a false flash.
Right.
So I talked to Dr. Feltman about this, and he says, John, you know, I want you to take a look at this very carefully, and write to these departments and see if they have records. Well, there was one part where there was a down chopper that was on fire right on our post.
Right.
And I looked into that very carefully because that part that kept coming back.
Well, you said earlier in the story that you thought it was a chopper coming down and it was going to crash. That was your... Yeah. Okay.
But these choppers were in another scene in the whole month that took place at West Bend.
Okay.
And that goes on and on and on, too, with it. And it landed right on Charlie Company's building, or on the other side of the building.
Wow.
And I had to take a look at this very carefully because, you know, Dr. Feldman was very strict on some of the things I had flashes with.
Right.
Because he told me it could be screen memories, false memories, things like this. And he said, once you get documents or reports, make sure you have to confirm these things.
Right.
Just don't talk about and confirm them.
Right.
So I contacted Fort Rutgers, Alabama, and I spoke to Mrs. Hendrickson, and she looked into this, and she said, yes, there is documents on these down choppers, and they're classified, but it's since 1977. I'm sure we could unclassify them.
Mm-hmm.
And she did, and she sent me those documents, and I showed it to Dr. Feltman, and he says, well, that's part of the big puzzle you just put together just now because these choppers were involved, engaged, too. So there was some battle or something going on.
Something went on where these choppers were lost for whatever reason.
For whatever reason, they were lost in this engagement.
Right, right. So you mentioned earlier that... while you were on this slab in this warehouse-like hospital room, that you believed that some kind of procedure took place?
Yes, there was medical procedures. I'm sure there was. Because they seemed to go like in rolls, like you're next, one person next. And next.
Right.
And they were all of us there.
Okay.
All of us were going on.
Do you have any memory of any invasive procedure, or have you had a full body scan x-ray to make sure there is nothing within your system?
Well, my left knee I got a scar there.
Right.
And I talked to a doctor, and he looked at him, and he said, John, you got a torn ligament. And I said, a torn ligament? I don't remember having a torn ligament.
Right.
There's a scar there, and it's been mended real nicely.
Hmm.
Nothing wrong with it. And I'm telling myself, how did that happen, you know?
Right.
And there's another doctor I saw who is a neurologist.
Right.
And he took an MRI, and there's a small, tiny pin-like or pencil head-like metal piece between my eyes. And I asked him what that is, and he says, you didn't know.
Right.
I showed that to Dr. Feltman, and I gave him the x-rays, and he looked at me, and he goes, you got something between your eyes, John. A small, tiny, tiny metal.
Right. But could that be just a metal shard that when you were working on a vehicle one day, or a wrench, and maybe, you know, could there be could it have been a natural occurrence?
No, it's kind of embedded on a skull.
Right. Wow.
So, yeah. I would definitely remember that.
Right.
There's some metal hit me in the
eye. True. But, welders, for instance, they're notorious for getting pieces of metal without even knowing that they have it in their skin.
Yeah.
So I was just curious in case it was something of that nature. So as you remembered what happened and what was happening, did you have any sense of fear of the memories?
Yes, I did. I had. I was shivering and perspiring when I started remembering this. I never felt any kind of feeling like this before.
Right.
It's really, over the line, so to speak, kind of feeling, you know.
And I could imagine each time you qualified what you were remembering, that it became even more of a frightening instance that this possibly could have happened, and you wouldn't have even known about it had you not had this breakout in a nightmare.
Yeah, I was telling myself at the beginning, this can't be true.
Right.
I don't believe this. This is too wild.
Yeah, this is a little too freaky.
One person to come up with a whole battalion. You're talking about a lot of people here involved, and I wasn't the only one there.
Right.
And the guys who were with me, you know, they after this incident, within months later, the Army at Fort Benning told me, John, we're going to send you to West Berlin.
Gee, thanks.
I know. I was telling them, where's West Berlin? And I remember the captain, he was a Green Beret.
Right.
And he was telling me, yeah, you're going to go to West Berlin on the other side of the Iron Curtain.
Right.
You know, I lost all my contacts. I lost my friends. I don't know what happened to them.
Right. They just separated you from the pack.
Yeah. That's it. They just, everybody, gone.
Yeah. Hmm. Have you ever been able to catch up to any of your mates that you went through basic with, or you went through your first posting with?
Yeah, I found a couple people, at least three.
Right.
As I know right now, is one is my drill sergeant.
Okay.
Sergeant Santini. I called him up, and he was at Fort Polk, Louisiana.
Oh, right.
And he was a command sergeant major then. And I talked to him, and I said, hey, Sergeant Santini, how you doing? And I told him what I was doing, and he said, hey, John, why don't you give me those documents? I want to take a look at them. I said, okay, sure. And at that time, he had the slight stutter.
Right.
Called him back 2 weeks later. Mm-hmm. And when I talked to him, I couldn't understand a word he was saying to me.
Wow.
The stuttering became so bad. It's like I triggered something there.
Right. Wow.
And I tried to get a hold of him again, and he's gone.
Mm.
He left for Polk, Louisiana.
Right.
One guy said, you went back to Georgia. Where is he living at? I don't know.
Yeah.
And the other person was my captain.
Okay.
And he lives in Phoenix City, Alabama.
Right.
And I talked to him, and he went into a story by telling me how he started with West Point, went to Vietnam, came back to the state, went to Silver Other Post, and ended up at Fort Benning. And, you know, I talked to him about that formation, and he said he couldn't remember that. And I asked both of the sergeant and my captain about this down chopper report, because I had the paperwork.
Right.
And they couldn't remember that. That's like asking somebody if they remember the house on fire.
Right.
They couldn't remember that.
Wow. Just totally gone out of their mind.
I don't know. Maybe she got to them first. I have no idea.
Yeah, maybe so. Hold on there, John. We're going to do a quick break, and we'll be right back as we head into the final 12 minutes.
All background music and bumps can be found at GarageBand.com. Support your local artists.
Listening to BlogTalkRadio.com.
On the 7th of April, we have Amy, the pagan witch, returning with us, her special sense of spring. And on the 14th, Petra glyphs in the sky. Jeff is back with us to tell us more of the Phoenix Lights.
Let me take you on a journey to Phoenix, Arizona.
Come on.
UFOs are among us. South Mountain, where the petroglyphs show evidence that the Indians knew all about this. March 13, 1997, the UFOs showed their presence, the Phoenix Lights. And it was seen by masses. Still people hating, still people doubting. Roosevelt came through and destroyed all the petroglyphs on the mountain, cause they knew they amounted to something, but they didn't want to admit. Now we got rumors of a UFO base under the cliffs. Vortex is letting out lights day and night. I wonder what's happening on the walls, what they write. When the light shines just at the right time, you can see snakes devour the heads of mankind. Petroglyphs in the sky, watch them UFOs fly by. We in the southwest Arizona, Sonoran Desert, UFOs are among us.
You are in the night zone on BlogTalkRadio.com. The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although the Night Zone takes all precautions to bring you quality information, the Night Zone and its subsidiaries or affiliates do not accept responsibility for information provided by our guests or hosts. The Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, KVHM, welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone.
And indeed, welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone. As we move into the final 10 minutes with John Vasquez. John, I got to tell you, your story is haunting. Because it comes from your heart. By listening to how you replay the story in your mind, it is obvious that it is well embedded in there, and you have a very clear understanding of what actually happened to you.
Oh yeah, it's like it happened last night.
Right. I have to do this because we are on a manual system tonight. Basically, the FTT OUFO, the Finding the Truth on UFO organization, FTTOUFO.com. If anybody out there has had a paranormal experience or a lost time incident, go over to the FTTOUFO and report your incident electronically and let their team of people have a look around and see what that's all about. John, you did the next step. You wrote a book.
Yes, I did. I found Bruce, and he's my publisher, Bruce Holmes.
Right.
He's my publisher and lives in Santa Barbara. And we got together at Laughlin. He had a cameraman with him, and I showed him documents and my story, and he was intrigued.
Right.
Within, 6 months after that, or maybe earlier, we worked on a book, and it's been out since 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still trying to get more information about this incident because there's so much thing that happened, and I'm also interested in finding another, maybe a producer who will try a 3D documentary on this, so that
right.
way you could look at the angles of this object and everybody else who was involved at this time.
Yeah, because it is difficult explaining to somebody what this light in the sky would look like to the human eye. I mean, we can envision it, we can kind of think about it, of what it was, but until you actually see it, it is, you know, it people's memories and people's vision completely distort things sometimes. So I can understand what you're saying. If you could get it, you know, into a visual mode so people could see how this transpired, I guess that would be quite fantastic. Sounds like a movie to me, John. I don't know about you, but
well,
you know,
I love to have it in a movie, but I haven't found a director or producer about this.
Right.
I mean, anybody who's interested in this kind of case when it comes to abductions, I love to talk to someone like that. I've been hoping to maybe. And someone would come along and say, John, you know, are you interested, and would you really want to work on this? Because
mm-hmm.
I know it's going to take a lot of work.
Well, there are a lot of people around the world that do listen to the Night Zone, so there may be somebody out there that says, you know what, this sounds like a good plot for a movie, and has the string. So John T. Vasquez, that's your name, sir, and anybody out there that wants to get in touch with him, you can either get in touch with him through the Night Zone, or you can contact Chris Hawley at the FTTO UFO. She was the one that wrote the story on John.
Yes.
And so FTTOUFO.com. You find Chris Hawley on that site. You'd be able to drop a message to her. Anybody interested in turning this into a movie? And you just remember me, John, when you're rich and famous. That's all I can say.
I'm still going to be John Vasquez.
Yeah, I understand.
You know.
Have you, so since this incident, John, have you had any other light incidences or lost time incidences?
Well, I've been having some other unusual incidences. After that abduction and all these other things happening, again, it's going to take another couple hours, but I'll make it short. After the Army, I came back home. And I stayed up in Reno, Nevada, working at Harris.
Right.
I'm my friend there, working at with his dad at the sheetrock business. And I was staying at this hotel, and I don't know, just unusual things started happening. It was raining and thundering that one night, and hearing radio, unusual radio.
Right.
And I called my buddy, and he came over, and you know, he said, "There's something going on here, John." And we went downstairs to the owner, and we talked to the owner, and we told her that there's a music going on. And he said, "No, you're the only one upstairs." I said, "Okay." So we got out of there.
So, what do you think? Do you think it's a dimensional thing, then, John? Do you think you're hearing something that you know? Are you hearing the past, the future, or just another dimensional presence?
Well, I can explain it as myself being sort of a beacon.
Okay.
I draw things to me. I don't know. It could be magnetic. It could be anything, really.
Right.
I'm not sure, but it seems like I attract something unusual. I don't know.
Do you have any problem wearing watches?
No.
No?
No problem with mechanical things or anything like that.
No.
It's just this oddity that happens. Like, for example, another one, when I came back from Reno to live here in San Diego, I worked at the Hotel del Coronado.
Right.
And when I was late one day, I had to go through the garden room area, which is right in the center. of the hotel, and I was passing through this tunnel. And when I got to the other side, the door was locked. The glass doors were locked.
Right.
So I couldn't go through. So I turned around, and I started walking back through the tunnel. And I saw this lady up on the second floor, and she had a long white gown,
mm-hmm.
long silvery hair. And I said, good morning. She kind of looked down at me and had a frown on her face, like she didn't want to hear that. So I said, whoops.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. You know, so I started walking back to the tunnel,
right.
And what I heard next was that she said, "It's not your fault." So I went back out there to see what she was telling me and why she said that, and I looked up and she was gone.
Wow.
Yeah, and then
Have there been any deaths in that hotel?
Well, there's a story that Maitre D' and everybody that's the bus guys and everybody come up to me and tell me, John, you saw a dead spirit or something
right.
like this.
Right.
I said, no, it had to be I didn't believe that. You know, I said, no, it had to be a guest, wanted to walk around or something.
Right.
You know, but they said, there's nobody up there.
Wow.
And they had a story at the hotel in 1928 or 30s someone's husband, her husband, killed her or something like
that. Wow,
that's
freaky.
Walking around somewhere, yeah.
Well, John, we're at the bottom of the show, and we could go for hours, or I could talk to you for days, and I'm sure we're going to have you back, and we're going to talk some more. It's been an absolute pleasure, John. Thank you for taking time out.
It's a pleasure.
Oh. It
I hope so. You know, and I hope I hear from everybody there, and please thank Chris for her work on my story.
Absolutely.
Really enjoy it every time when I look at it.
Absolutely.
It gives you this eerie look of the forest.
Yeah. Thank you very much, John. I appreciate it. I do have to bail out of here real quick
before
everything collapses
sir.
On me. It's been an absolute pleasure, sir. And ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's all. We'll talk to you next Tuesday. Good night, Night Zoners.
Thank you.
Got a minute?
Bye-bye.
I'm sure we all know someone who is experiencing difficult times during this recession, either with unemployment or financial problems or in relationships. I have friends like that. I would like to remind you that we are all in this together. So if you have friends experiencing hardships, support them with your advice. If you have acquaintances who are having rough times, nurture them with your friendship. Show them kindness. If you have family members who are having difficulties, show them your love. And if you have people in your life who have almost given up, throw them a lifeline of kindness. Remember the golden rule, but for the grace of God, go I. Blessings upon your household. Until then, next time we meet, God bless.
You are in the Night Zone on BlogTalkRadio.com. Production in association with BlogTalkRadio.com.